Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker. Into the end zone, touchdown, touchdown.
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown, 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 Buffalo. The Bills win it in overtime.
Hey, welcome to the show. It is Wednesday. It is the start of a new practice week for the Buffalo Bills. They're getting set to head to New York again, return to New York and play the Giants. We're coming to you live from Orchard Park from New Era Field. We're in our Seneca studio right next door to the stadium. And on the other side of us is the practice field. That's where we're going to head in a second. Bills heading out to the practice field for a noontime practice today, getting set for the Giants game on Sunday. Good afternoon. I'm John Murphy. This is Steve Tasker, longtime Bills wide receiver, Wall of Fame member, longtime NFL broadcaster. What else do you need in your resume? What do I say? West Turf forward?
No, keep going, man. You make me sound like I could really play and like I had this huge broadcast career. It's awesome.
Well, you did. But welcome to the show.
But it's all over now. Here we are.
Welcome to the show. Happy to have you here. We got a lot to talk about. A good show coming up. We're going to get to Chris Brown in a moment. He's going to join us from the Buffalo Bills practice field outside today. A little cloudy here in Orchard Park today, but it's warm and kind of muggy. And I checked the weather forecast for the Meadowlands on Sunday. It's supposed to be 85 degrees and partly cloudy. So probably getting those conditions right here in Orchard Park today. Chris Brown in practice in a moment. Field Yates is going to be a regular Wednesday contributor to our show. He's going to join us at 1 o'clock today. Who's Field Yates? He is an analyst for ESPN.com. Field Yates does a little bit of specialty in the area of fantasy football, which Steve and I are both neophytes.
Not even.
Not even. That it would imply
here's
that
the problem with my here's my view. I get it. I've tried the fantasy thing once or twice when it first started out back 15 years ago, I guess, probably. And you really got to put some time in. You got to pay attention to some stuff that I'm really not interested in paying attention to. I don't really care about, you know, what's going on in another division, in another town, in the third wide receiver, that kind of stuff. You really got to pay attention to it. And the problem is, too, when you start talking about it with somebody, you invariably have to talk about your team. And I could not be less interested in somebody else's fantasy team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem. The conversation bores me. Even if it's my, you know, if it's my team, because once you got it, it's like, okay, good. All right, let's let them play. I got to wait now till Sunday anyway. So I've never gotten into it because I'm always covering one or two teams at a time. I really don't, you know, back off and see. I certainly am aware of what's going on in the league like everybody else is, but man, oh man.
Yeah.
I got more. I just have other stuff I'm interested in more.
Me too.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
And I get it. It's a competitive juice. I get it.
I get it. It's fun for people. I'm not into it, but we're going to talk to Field Yates about it. Two things about fantasy. Number one, it when I dabbled in it 20 years ago or whatever, it forced you to, as you said, pay attention to stuff that you're not used to and root for things that I wasn't comfortable rooting for.
That's right? The thing.
Number two, listen to people talk about their fantasy team. And you're a golfer. Do you ever have a friend of mine has this, I think it's an accurate statement. There's nothing worse, he says, than listening to some guy, not a professional PGA golfer or an accomplished golfer, but some guy talk about his round of golf and taking you shot by shot through a hole. Yeah. Right? There's nothing worse. Yeah. I smoked the drive 238 yards down the middle, and then I sculled my 5-iron to within about 35 feet, and then I sank the putt. And you're sitting there. You ever get in the other end of that conversation? You're like, what? Yeah. And that's what it's like when people talk about their own fantasy team. I don't care.
And next time I do this to you, you'll understand why.
You don't do it when you play golf.
When you start talking about somebody, when somebody starts telling you that stuff, it's like, ask them what they did on 18. Then when they tell you 18, then they have no place to go. Right?
So you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Does that drive you crazy? Do people sit around your golf club afterwards? And I get it. Part of it is, you know, the camaraderie and talking to your friends. But there are guys who want to talk about their rounds.
Yeah, here's the thing.
They just shot an 87. They want to tell you about 86 of the 87 shots.
So I have a regular, you know.
Group that you play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's different when you play with the guys because you don't have to tell them what you did.
They see
you just pick the highlights and lowlights, and you bust each other chops
over all
of it. You
mostly laugh at each other.
Right, then you laugh at each other, have a few and that's it. That's how it should be. You can't really bring somebody in from the outside and do that. You can't start telling them the whole story. All you can do is just tell them episode here and episode there. That's what you do. You don't tell them the whole round. Yeah. Just say, wait till you hear what happened to us. He was and boom, done. Yeah. You don't have to go on. And then further down there, then three holes later, I'm like,
you want to hear a shank went into the woods.
Right. Stop,
four.
Stop, stop.
Right.
Right.
And that's what it's like when people talk about their fantasy team. Oh, well, I had this guy as my QB2, and I should have put him in. And
I had a chance to pick up this guy off waivers, and I'm like, I don't care, bro.
I don't care.
I got problems with
my own. That's not what we're going to talk with Field Yates about today. We're going to talk to him about the NFL and get maybe some tips for week two of your fantasy football season. He's coming by at 1 o'clock today. After practice, we anticipate it'll be about 1:30, 1:45. John Brown. Now, he'd be a good fantasy pickup. John Brown with a big game.
I'm going
to
pick him up off waivers.
Yeah, the go-ahead touchdown fourth quarter of Sunday's game in New York. John Brown had a good game, had a big game, and we're going to talk with John Brown coming up after practice day. Looking forward to that. We're going to hear from Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds after practice today. Coffee with the players coming up today. Coffee with the Bills. Lorenzo Alexander has a cup of coffee and talks a little bit about this season and about this game. And so we got a busy schedule. I'm looking forward to today's show.
And also,
I'm ready to turn the page to the New York Giants.
And
game.
Speaking of which, this is Wednesday, so the players are back. They're going to start practicing, and our guy is at practice, Brownie.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, on the sidelines outdoors at practice today. Hello, Chris. Good afternoon. Good to have you with us here.
Good to be with you guys.
Sorry to bother you. I look like you're working hard. What are you doing, man?
I'm just taking attendance. Lineup? Just trying to take attendance and get as many guys counted up before you come to me as possible.
Well, we heard.
I feel like I interrupted something important. Yeah.
We heard from Sean McDermott that Lorenzo's not going to have taking a day off. John Brown's taking a day off. Inseki's taking a day off. And all these guys they call veteran days is probably the GPS stuff they do. They check on their heart rate and stuff throughout the week, and these guys are due for a day off because of their exertion and their age and any other factors they put in, right? I mean, so really the only guys that we're looking at that are hurt are Andre Roberts and Taron Johnson, correct?
Right, and Tyler Croft's going to be limited again today as he kind of works his way back into game shape, coming back from the spring foot surgery. He's done a lot of stuff. We just haven't seen him do a ton at full speed. So whether he makes that jump some point during this week from a limited participant to a full participant, I think remains to be seen. But coach last week said sometime in the first few games here. So you got to believe that it wasn't last week. So it's either probably this week or maybe next week, unless he incurs some kind of setback.
I think one of the things you can look for as well is maybe that he gets up and, you know, we come back tomorrow after a hard day today. He feels great, and they say, okay, you're released. And then we find out tomorrow he's full go. And then that throws a pebble into the New York Giants preparation about are they going to use this guy? And that, you know, they get some sort of competitive advantage about it.
Yeah, I suppose that's possible. You know, and I even if he is up on Sunday, I can't imagine that they would give him like a full workload, 50, 60 snaps. I think they'll rotate those two rookies in a healthy amount. Probably Dawson Knox is the closest thing to what Tyler Croft is from a pass catching perspective. Not to say that Tommy Sweeney couldn't do it, but I think probably Croft and Knox are the two best runners. Route runners, shall we say, in the group.
Yeah, but the point of that is the Giants have got to be sitting there thinking, okay, they went 22 personnel a ton last week. Now they got this another tight end. What are we going to be looking at? It just it's just one of those things where if you can alter their preparation, it may give you an edge on them not spending enough time on what you're really going to do.
Yeah, and I don't even know if they're going to get that far down the ladder this week because their defense looked god-awful, especially on the back end. Against the Cowboys, I mean, busted coverages like I have never seen before, especially with a secondary that has a veteran player in Antoine Bethea at free safety, and he was one of the most guilty parties in terms of the back seven. Him and the defensive captain, Alec Ogletree, the linebacker, those two guys were off the screen and off the map and off the reservation maybe more than anybody in that whole group. You understand if a rookie first-round pick like DeAndre Baker has a couple of miscues, first career action in a regular season setting, and they rotated him and out with him in and out with Antonio Hamilton, who's a fourth-year player, but Antonio Hamilton couldn't tackle, DeAndre Baker couldn't cover, and Antoine Bethea and Alec Ogletree couldn't get people lined up or at least play the same defensive call that maybe the rest of the guys were playing, and that's why it was such a fire drill on defense for the Giants last week.
Unfortunately, though, for me, Brownie, I've seen teams, you go through that, it's easy to fix that up. All you got to do is talk louder.
Well, yeah. I mean, you would think that two veterans like Bethea and Ogletree would be able to get all those ducks in a row this week. But if I'm the Bills, I'm testing that early and often. So it wouldn't shock me if they come out and start chucking it all over the place again like they did last week, but maybe with a different personnel grouping. Why don't you spread those corners thin, which don't run deep for the Giants to begin with, because the only guy that really can held his own last week was Janoris Jenkins, who was their high free agent signing a couple of years ago. That was the only guy that played consistently, quite frankly. So if I'm the Bills and I'm Brian Daboll, not to tell him what to do. He certainly knows how to do his job. But, man, I'd throw four wide out there in a heartbeat. Spread that cornerback depth thin. See if they can handle it.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com at Bills practice, on the sideline of the Bills practice. So let's ask you about the Bills and start with if you want to have four wide out, you need a quarterback to throw it to him. I think it's going to be an interesting week of practice and an interesting game for Josh Allen, Chris. He led the fourth quarter game-winning comeback, obviously, last Sunday, but he has a role to play in those four first-half turnovers, and I'm sure he's looking to nip that in the bud before that continues, right?
Yeah, of course. You never want to be -3 in a game in the turnover margin. And I think the last time they did that and won was 1997. So we're talking 22 years here. I think they realize, Josh Chief among everybody, how fortunate they were to pull that game out and get a W. So, yeah, I mean, and ball security, has been overemphasized time and time and time again by Coach McDermott. He's actually got on a pedestal in the locker room a football that is painted gold, and it says, respect the football. And even after Friday's practice here last week, he said the two most important things that we have to be mindful of are, number one, the football and respecting it, and number two, our teammates. And so you think about where he has put the thing on the priority list to see the carelessness that happened. And granted, some of it was happenstance. A couple of tip balls end up being intercepted. That's going to happen through the course of any NFL regular season. But the fumbles, I think, are what really stuck in his craw. So you better believe that when they go through station drills this week and go over fundamentals, I'll guarantee you that they're going to have that two-man drill where they have one person carrying the ball, applying 5 points of pressure, and the other guy trying to punch at it and knock it out.
Chris, let me ask you a little bit about the Buffalo offensive line, which, you get mixed opinions on this week. I thought overall they were pretty good against the Jets last week, and I'd look for more of the same, allowing just one sack on the game. There were a couple of breakdowns. Deion Dawkins struggled a little bit against a very talented Jets defensive line. But to see Mitch Morse playing for the first time, to see Mitch Morse out in front running as well as he did and moving around like he did, it was a revelation to me. I think there could be some good things coming from this Buffalo offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, I think we know to a certain extent that when the Bills signed Mitch Morse, the book on him was mobility is a major part of his game, and credit Brian Daboll for taking advantage of that and using that in the game plan last week. I think when it came to driving that Jets defensive line off the ball and being a road grader line in the run game, they struggled at times. But when they used some of those pulling guards, pulling center plays, pulling tackle plays to get out on the edges, they were very, very effective. And so I think what Coach Daboll has to do, and granted, you're not going to go against a defensive line quite that stout every week, but if there's one thing that this Giants defensive line is known for, it's for standing in and grinding well. And they did okay last week against Dallas with Ezekiel Elliott. Not great. They did okay. I think where you can get this defensive line is out on the edge. And so that might fall into Buffalo's strengths, might play into Buffalo's strengths very well this week to get out on the edges, because if there's one thing the Giants' defense is not as a whole, especially in the front seven, they are not fast. So if you feel like you can outflank them, especially with some misdirection, I'm all for that. Go ahead and do that, because you got offensive linemen this year that can get out in front of the ball carriers and get you chunk plays.
There was some attention given to Ty Ensekhe coming in late in the game for Cody Ford at right tackle. It was part of the script, as Sean McDermott said, to do that. Nevertheless, it's a little bit unusual, and there's some people that really thought Cody Ford struggled a little bit like he did in this game that he did not struggle with in the preseason. What do you make of that?
It's called a regular season defense. The scheming is just going to be more complex, and so you've got to be quick on your toes in terms of processing what's coming at you. And you know that John Feliciano, a guy who's a veteran player who has played center and guard, is communicating that stuff down the line to Cody, whether he's saying switch, 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 you know, on a stunt or a twist of some kind, or whether he's saying double and go. You know, like you can go and get your man for your one-on-one matchup later in the play. He's communicating that all to him, but seeing it all at regular season speed requires an adjustment oftentimes for a lot of rookies, and I think that's what Cody Ford was going through last week. We got to remember, these guys are a lot of rookies, got a lot of playing time last week. They're not going to be perfect on everything. It's going to be a learning process. You know, I don't think he was awful, and I don't think he was outstanding. He was somewhere in between.
Yeah, and one of the other places that where they played a rookie was Devin Singletary and the running backs. Frank Gore started the game maybe in the backfield, but Devin Singletary played 70% of the offensive snaps. I don't think anybody saw that coming. What do you make of the running backs and how they're rotating him?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it demonstrates the level of trust that they have in a rookie like Devin. Who has got a lot to handle if he's going to be out there all three downs. And he was out there from the very beginning of the game last week on those first two or three series before Frank came in and actually got the first carry of the game. So to see him out there early, I think, is a good sign as far as how much playing time he's going to get going forward. And then in the second half, to spark the offense the way he did with some chunk play runs, I think is going to get him some more playing time this week. All the focus this week by the broadcasters on TV is going to be about Saquon Barkley, and deservedly so. I'm going to be interested to see if Singletary can kind of match some of that effectiveness. I'm not saying that Devin Singletary is going to be running away for 60-yard touchdowns like Saquon Barkley can. That's not in his arsenal because he runs a 4.6, 6.40. But in terms of getting out of tight areas and plays that look like they're going to go for a two-yard loss and turning it into a 3 or 4 yard gain, that's Singletary's bread and butter, and I think he's going to be able to do that this week.
All right, Chris, so between those running backs, Gore and Singletary, which one is the starter and which one is the featured back?
Yeah, what are you going to try to get me in trouble now?
I love the way Sean –
You put me on the spot there, Murph. I appreciate it.
No, I love the way Sean McDermott handled that. An hour ago at his news conference. Yeah. I love the way he sort of deflected that, and I don't really know if that is even answerable, to be honest with you. I don't get
right.
That.
I think if you want to go based on time on the field, it's probably going to be Devin Singletary going forward, and I see Frank Gore as a guy that's going to be mixed in, utilized on some key downs where you need a veteran to come through for you, and Frank Gore is that in several times over. And so I think there could be scenarios that come up where Frank is just a better fit based on experience in a crunch time situation.
Like the end of the game last Sunday.
They're going to say, yeah, so 20, get on the field and let's close this thing out. 4-minute drill at the end of the game. You know, you got a short yardage situation. That guy's going to be in the game.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that Frank's level of importance on this roster is not there. It absolutely is. But I think the dynamic skill set and vision that Devin Singletary can offer on the field, where he can make a bad play into a good play, is invaluable. And I think that's going to get him on the field more often than not.
Well, one of the things that came out of this last game against the Jets and moving forward is going to be the Bills' defense. The only thing that happened was Taron Johnson came out with a groin injury. other than that, they are what they were advertised. They were a top five defense, 223 yards allowed. They kept the Jets to 8 points offensively. They seemed better than advertised and better than
six,
a year ago.
Really.
Right, exactly. What about the secondary with Taron Johnson's absence?
Yeah, so Saran Neal came in. It's a position that he's been learning since the spring, and I don't think he hurt them all that much. Now, granted, the pass rush that the Bills had going against the Jets last week was pretty darn effective, and that certainly helped the guys on the back end. With an extra week like the Giants have to perhaps game plan for what they saw from Saran Neal and the snaps that he did get on defense, it'll be interesting to see what they throw at him. But here's the thing. The Giants' slot receiver is in concussion protocol, Sterling Shepard. So do they go with a game plan that features their slot receiver? Because they're talking, if Sterling Shepard can't go, the receiver that's going to step into that role will be Russell Shepard on the Giants' depth chart. Do you make him a focal point of your offensive game plan? Because, you know, it stands to reason that the Bills are going to have a backup playing the nickel. Well, you're assuming it's going to be Saran Neal. And I think Coach McDermott left the door open today because it could be someone like Kevin Johnson, who has experience as a slot corner in this league. Heck, in some situations, it could even be Kurt Coleman, because we saw the way the Bills used Raphael Bush, the team's third safety, as a nickel last year when Taron Johnson went down. So I think there are some options at play there that could be predicated on who the Giants ultimately line up in that slot receiver position. So there's a little bit of guesswork for both teams here, quite frankly, as far as game planning goes, just because of the uncertainty as to who the opponent's going to line up in that spot on offense and defense, respectively.
Yeah, and that actually gets me to the final question I have for you, Chris, and it's sort of an overview of the game. And look, we only have the one game's worth of evidence on who the Bills might be, who the Giants might be. And based on that, it's easy to say, well, the Bills are a better team than the Giants. They certainly look like it, but it's hard to imagine the Giants' defense being that inept again a second consecutive week, isn't it, or is it?
You would think so. I would say the one major concern, if you're the Giants, that I do not think is fixable in the short term, is their pass rush. I mean, it was sorely absent last week. I mean, you go watch the tape of the game last week. There were about a handful of plays where Dak Prescott could have opened up a folding chair, cracked open a six-pack, and had a picnic. I mean, there was just way too much time for that guy back there. I mean, he had a chance to survey the whole field right to left and then left to right again before he threw the ball. That didn't happen one or two times, guys. That happened 6 to 8 times in last week's game. If you give Josh Allen or any NFL quarterback, for that matter, 5, 6, 7 seconds, there's no DB in the league that can cover people for that long. On a good defense, even like the Bills. So they've got to figure out how to dial up pressure by sending extra people. I'm talking about the Giants now, because their front three, they're big, stout players that are great against the run. But even their outside linebackers are not terribly quick off the edge. They're going to have to come up and devise some clever blitz schemes that are probably going to have to involve defensive backs if they're going to get to Josh Allen and at least move him off his spot.
So the Bills will probably see the same things that we do, maybe with some more detail, but how do you attack that if you're Brian Daboll? Last week they came out in 22 personnel with 2 backs, 2 tight ends, and then broke the formation and spread it all over the field. And you said maybe they'll go deep into the secondary, put 4 wides out there, and maybe make them go deep into their depth of secondary. Or is it a combination? What are they going to do early on if they got a team that can't rush the passer and they got a secondary that blows some coverages?
Yeah, I'd be throwing again.
Right, yeah.
I'd be throwing again.
Yeah.
I don't care what personnel grouping Brian Daboll wants to use, but I'd come out throwing again. Spread the field and test the depth of this secondary, because to me – it's, quite frankly, guys, it's just not there. It might even be worse than the Jets secondary, which Brian Daboll decided to test in a different way. He went heavy personnel to keep base personnel defensively on the field because he thought that they could win with matchups there. This week, it may not matter what personnel grouping you throw out there. All you may have to do is just simply spread the field. And I like the Bills matchups when you get to the third and fourth cover assignment. I really do. No matter whether it's a linebacker, whether it's a safety, whether it's a fourth corner, the Bills are better across the board, in my estimation.
They may do that in a couple of different ways then, too. They may go heavy and they may go light, both in the first series. You know, they might start using personnel combinations quick and early and often.
Yeah, the Giants just are – I think they're outmanned, quite frankly, Bills offense compared to Giants defense in terms of quality of personnel and in terms of depth of personnel. So that should spell good things for the Bills offense this week.
Thanks, Chris.
You got it, guys.
All right, Bernie.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com on the practice field right around the corner here where the Bills are getting set for the New York Giants. And, yeah, I get all of that. And I agree with Chris, Steve. The Giants do look out, man, but it's based on one game. And I'm reluctant to say this is who the Giants are. And I'm equally as reluctant to say this is who the Buffalo Bills are. We'll
and I think this is a time when, for us out here, it's fun for us to like conjecture and say what they should they do, their depth, their secondary, their pass rush, and all this stuff. The simple fact of the matter is when they're putting together a game plan in the Bills side of it and the Giants side of it as well, you're looking at your own people the most. You're saying, what have we got? Who's healthy? Who does some things really well? And do the things that we do really well mesh with the weaknesses of the team that we're going to play? So it's still really about your guys and putting them out there in a spot where you think they can win. And so we have yet to think we'll never know what the Bills coaches really think until they show us on Sunday.
That's right. Hey, our thanks to Chris Brown for joining us from practice. Field Yates from ESPN is going to be with us at 1 o'clock. John Brown, Bills receiver, after practice today. And Coffee with the Players, Lorenzo Alexander, Coffee with the Bills coming up in the 2 o'clock hour as well. Plus, we'll hear from Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds in the 2 o'clock hour. Got a Twitter poll today, and it's based on what you saw last Sunday against the Jets and what you look forward to seeing from the Buffalo offense moving forward. Pretty simple Twitter poll. You can check it out on our Twitter site, One Bills Live. If you have an answer to this, send in a tweet. We can read it on the air in the tweet sheet. We can you can vote in the Twitter poll, and you can give us a call to discuss, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Here's a question on Twitter. What's the most encouraging part of the Bills' offense as they head into week two? We know the defense is great, but on the offensive side of the ball, the problem last year, what did you see last Sunday against the Jets that encourages you this Sunday and into the future? The most encouraging part of the Bills' offense as they head into the future. The Twitter poll's been up for just a little bit, 640 votes in so far, and it's fairly close. 40% of you say it is the play of rookie running back Devin Singletary that you find most encouraging. 33% of you say it is the play of the offensive line. 23% say it is the play of our guest coming up after practice, John Brown. 4% have something else in mind. I would vote offensive line, and I'll tell you why, Steve. I knew John Brown was going to be pretty good. I knew Devin Singletary had the potential to be pretty good. I didn't know what to expect from the Buffalo offensive line, and what I saw Sunday encourages me. To me, that's the most encouraging part of the Bills' offense moving forward, the offensive line. But I'm willing to listen to arguments for any of those.
Right. I think Devin Singletary was a pleasant surprise, obviously, like a lot of people did. I think John Brown, we knew – you can say what you want. You've been trumpeting John Brown since last February, since when they signed him.
I got a cut of his bonus.
Before they signed him.
I got a cut of his signing bonus.
There you go. Yeah. So you're right. John Brown was a more known commodity. He's a veteran in the National Football League. Devin Singletary, we didn't know. And certainly we saw some flashes, some pretty good stuff in the preseason. But still, he's a rookie running back. And you know, it's not unusual for a rookie running back to play well. But he was a surprise, I got to tell you. But this offensive line, as much focus as they put in on the offseason, as much angst as there has been through the preseason because of the superficial injuries that they got that didn't allow them to get together and play all at once, that offensive line played pretty well. And I think going forward, I'm looking for them to get even better. And I think so. I would say the most encouraging thing would be offensive line.
Listeners, viewers, let us know what you think. What's the most encouraging thing about the Buffalo offense as they head into week two? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Those lines are open right now. Send in a tweet. We can read it on the tweet sheet. Vote in the Twitter poll. Your vote will be counted. Every vote counts. All right, we're just getting started. We're going to get into this deep when we come back. Come on back with us. It is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. We're coming to you live from the Seneca Studio, Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing comes close.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back. One Bills Live. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio. Wednesday, week two, the Giants. The Bills are going back to MetLife Stadium to play the Giants this week. And that's kind of the focus of our discussion today. The most encouraging part of the Buffalo offense as they head into week two, what do you like? John Brown's play, Devin Singletary's play, the play of the offensive line. We left Josh Allen out of this Twitter poll because he had four turnovers, right? He was involved in four turnovers. But if you want to say that was encouraging, his fourth quarter rebound, I'm good with that. I'll listen to that. I might not disagree with that.
We're getting descended on by social media here, so we got a lot of stuff on the tweet sheet already. Most encouraging part of the Bills' offense headed into week two from Jeffrey. He says, the O-line was a priority 1A for being in the offseason. We could not properly assess any other part of the offense last year because of poor old offensive line play, and it affects everything else. Fixing it is the basis for any real chance to be better. It looks like all those efforts to fix it have worked. And I would agree with that 100%. That's where I'm sitting right now, right on the lap of Jeffrey on Twitter.
Well, here's what I would say to you and Jeffrey. Pump the brakes a little bit. One game. Jeffrey finishes his tweet saying, it looks like all those efforts to fix it have worked. Well,
looks like it.
It looked pretty good. Looked pretty good, I think, this past
Sunday.
We got
a lot of football to play, no question.
Yes. Yes. And different defense. And that was a pretty good defense. A much better defense than what the Bills will face this week. But I'm not quite there yet. I think that was the most encouraging part for me, what the offensive line did, how they played, opening holes in the run game, being athletic and active and protecting Josh Allen, only sacked once in the game. It was not perfect, by the way.
I will say this, though. It does make you go, whew.
Yeah.
They don't stink.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Another
one from the tweet sheet. By the way, the tweet sheet is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills. From Sippin' the Kool-Aid, the most encouraging part of the Bills' offense going into week two. Sippin' the Kool-Aid says, all are great choices, but I voted other. And there it comes. I think Josh Allen completing 65% of his passes, having the ability to lead his team back from 16-0 is the most encouraging thing for me. Going into week two, clean up the turnovers, and I believe we have a potent offense moving forward. Needs to be said about, and he's right, Sippin' the Kool-Aid, he or she is right. 65% completion percentage is big for a guy who was 52% last year. But you spent your early morning coffee hours in here this morning looking at some more video of the Bills Jets and raving, blurting out expletives about how good he was throwing the ball early on. He was.
He was carving
them up. He was throwing great. He was throwing strikes. He was throwing fastballs down the middle.
The second turnover was on the fourth down conversion after he got stuffed on a quarterback sneak. Certainly you can, and I would, complain about, you know, I know it. He's 6'5", he's 240, he's big. But you're banging your head right into what the Jets do best. They're right down inside on their defense. Don't just do a quarterback sneak like that. Plus the fact that, man, you get your quarterback in there, and I watched the replay of that. The Jet guys were trying to give him the business while they were down there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they were piling on, pulling, grabbing. You know, you don't want to get the guy nicked on a stupid fourth and one or third and one, you know? Hand the football off. Spread him out. Give him some room.
On the third down.
Yeah, on the third down. And the fourth down, too. I mean, put him in shotgun or something. Don't. You know, and I'm not treating him like he's, you know, made out of, you know, paper mache. But man, oh man, you got to protect the guy. And that fourth down, the other turnover was the botched exchange on a fourth and short. So all of that stuff, they were -4 on the turnover ratio until the final play of the game in a meaningless lateral fumble rooski. So. To come back and win that game, yeah, it was big. And I'm telling you, early in that game, he was carving those guys up. He was throwing it well. He made a couple of pinpoint passes. And, you know, a lot of people say, that, hey, the botched pass to Cole Beasley was his fault. Well, that's 50-50 at best. You got to pick that up. So, I mean, you got to catch the ball. But, man, I was like, they were really playing good offensively up until that point. And there was 18 straight passes. So I'm really encouraged by Josh's play, really encouraged by it. But everything else is because all this happens because the O-line played well.
I will listen to arguments that and Sipping the Kool-Aid made a good strong argument about why Josh Allen is the most encouraging thing about the offense. Certainly, going into that game last week, going into the season, he was the critical piece, right? The central question: how is Josh going to be? Well, he was okay, and he turned it over four times, and we can say that he was okay. You got to fix those turnovers. That's the first thing we really addressed with Chris Brown out on the practice field. And you know, and I mean, I think as a Bills fan, you know how Josh is, and I'm certain that was – and it was the fumbles. Chris is absolutely right. The interceptions were a little fluky. But being careless with the football, coughing it up, you know, and as Daboll said Monday when he talked to the media, we had the soundbite yesterday, two hands on the ball. You can't have that happen on a center quarterback exchange. Fix those two issues, and all of a sudden it's two interceptions. It's two fluky
game.
Interceptions.
Yeah, it's a different game. Now, there were some other – one interception got brought back because of a penalty, and another one should have been intercepted. So he's got that to clean up, and those should worry you more than the tipped pass – up in the air, up for grabs kind of thing, you know? I mean, so he's still got a lot of things to clean up. But when the ball comes out of his hand on time, those underneath throws, they've got that. And that 65% completion percentage kind of is right down that what you're looking at when you see that. So I'm all about people who want to argue that Josh is the most encouraging thing. For me, I'm sticking right up with the big guys.
What's the most encouraging thing to you about the Buffalo offense heading into week two? Mark in Buffalo on the line with us has some thoughts. Mark, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey, Steve just touched a minute ago on the one problem I had with the whole game most of all was when the third down play when we brought everybody to the line of scrimmage and we tried to smash mouth it, and it looked like we were going to try and do the same thing on fourth down, turn the ball over, didn't make it. And then the same situation when we got the safety against us, we brought everybody to the line of scrimmage, and exactly what the Jets were looking for and hoping we would do, smash that ball right into the line, and they were going to attack us and try to catch us in the end zone, and quote-unquote, they did. They got the points. But I just absolutely hate when coaches get into that macho attitude and on third down and short, fourth down and short, and they don't spread the field out and they bring everybody to the line of scrimmage and say, okay, we're going to go mano a mano. You're just making it tougher on yourself. And our line has not proven that they can just do that. Not yet. So,
well, Mark, you make a good point. I will say this. They want to see if they can do it, number one. Number two, I don't think it's a macho attitude. I think they're playing percentages. Like, we got a better percentage chance of converting this third and one, fourth and one, by loading up and getting a couple of good blocks and diving for it for a first down. I don't think it's a macho thing. I think it's a percentage thing.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. And I've never been one, no matter what. And I think it sounds like I just did it a minute ago. I really didn't want to go down that road. I get the play selection. They do things for a reason. And I've never been one to say, hey, they shouldn't have done this. Certainly, we can sit here 3 days after the fact and say, wow, you should have done this. And, well, obviously, they should have done something different. They should have got the exchange right. And you don't even know if they'd have gotten the exchange right, they might have snapped one off for a touchdown. It might have been a play-action pass. We don't know. But it never got to that point. So, yeah, play selection, you can say, hey, when a quarterback sneak doesn't work – certainly it's easy to throw darts at that, but I'm not here to do that. But it certainly, I hate it because of the way it looked after it went that, you know, Josh ended up at the bottom of a pile of 6,000 pounds of bodies and he's the guy you got to have. So, I know he's a big, strong guy. I loved the play selection they had later in the game. Murph and I spoke about it yesterday, that third and two where they went student body left and Josh just tucked it under his arm. Let's go. And he walked out. I think I remember he just walked out of bounds after an 8-yard gain. They had no shot of stopping that.
Yeah.
And I think, you think about it, that might have been set up by the fact that they stoned him on the quarterback sneak early in the game and the fourth and short where they botched the center snap. You know, they might have used that later on to their advantage, did the Bills offense, because that play selection was perfect. That was perfect.
Hey, what do you think, what's the most, as the Bills head into week two, what are you most encouraged about as far as their offense is concerned? Is it the play of the offensive line? Maybe it's the play of Josh Allen. We didn't put it on our Twitter poll. Is it the play of John Brown? Is it Devin Singletary? Bills head coach Sean McDermott was asked about Singletary today. He was asked if his confidence in the rookie running back Singletary was enhanced, was improved by the way Singletary played against the Jets. Here's what Sean McDermott said.
It certainly didn't hurt. But, you know, listen, you guys have been to training camp. You've seen some of the things that our backs have been able to do, that Devin in this case, you know, and to their credit, all of our young players, we had a lot of young players play and play significant snaps in week one, and I thought all of them did a nice job and with certainly room to grow, and that's what this week is about.
Yeah, Sean, it was funny. He was asked several times, and I get it. It's a legitimate question. Who's your feature back? Who's your starter back? What's the difference? And he didn't want to go there, and I understand why he would not. And I think they perceive a role for both Singletary and Frank Gordon, maybe even T.J. Yeldon moving forward here, Steve. I think they do figure they got a role for all those guys.
Well, the feature back is the back who's in the backfield at any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
The starting running back is the guy who takes the first snap of the game, or the guy who's in the backfield with the first personnel grouping who takes the first snap. So there you have it. You can't feature a running back who's standing on the sidelines. And you can't be a starter unless you're out there with the first snap of the game.
And it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter what you call
it. It doesn't work that way anymore. It's right. Not like that in the NFL these days. You don't have that. Now, certainly there are teams who do. Le'Veon Bell is going to be out there 90% of the snaps. Saquon Barkley, 90% of the snaps. Zeke Elliott, 90% of the snaps. Those guys are different guys. The Bills aren't doing it that way, at least not at this point.
They called it running back by committee on
Devin Singletary. Yeah, Devin Singletary played 70% of the snaps. I mean, you know, take that what
including
it's
the first one. He was
yeah,
the starter.
But, you know, but then again, at the end of the game, when it was on the line, they got a run of the clock, who took the handoffs?
Yeah.
Frank Gore,
yeah.
Three straight.
He was the feature back then.
He was the feature back then.
Yeah.
So it's, you know.
I wouldn't get caught up in that.
It's, well, I'm not.
I know you're not. I think some people are. Might be.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it.
Thank you.
Thank you
for taking my advice.
I will not get caught up in that.
Hey, what do you think about the Buffalo offense? What are you encouraged about as they move to week two? Got time to take a few more phone calls this hour. Got time to read a few more tweets, and we'll do that after the break. We've got Field Yates coming up from ESPN at the top of the hour. Hey, the Bills at the Giants this Sunday, and a reminder, the next week is, of course, the home opener. And if you're planning on coming to that game or any Bills regular season home games in a limo or a bus, you need a permit. You need to get it ahead of time to be allowed to park in the bus and limo parking lot here at New Era Field. If your bus or limo does not have a permit, it'll be turned away. So for more information about bus and limo parking permits, contact Tailgate Guys. Email them at bills@tailgateguys.com or call them at 716-982-8119. Coming back with more One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the show, One Bills Live. We call it John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our studio, our Seneca studio in Orchard Park. And Field Yates coming up. If you have fantasy football questions, Field Yates is a fantasy football expert. You can phone those in or send them in on Twitter, and we'll talk about that. What are you pointing at?
I was pointing at your screen. Surprising to you and I, a guy that both of us really thinks a good player that played for the Jets last week, Quincy Enunwa, was out with a neck injury for the rest of the season.
Yeah,
that's a big loss for them.
Yeah,
Quincy Enunwa, and I know that Rich Gannon said this on the broadcast on Sunday. We had done some Jet games last year, and they had said the same thing. Quincy Enunwa is a running back playing in a. Plays like a running back in a tight end's body who plays wide receiver. I mean, this guy is a big, strong, fast wide receiver. He just signed an extension with the Jets, and this last offseason, or maybe during last season, and I was bummed because he was going to be a free agent. I thought, man, that is one guy the Bills should take a look at. He is a big, strong athlete. Now, he's out for the rest of the year for the Jets. You talk about it going bad.
Well, leads me to this question in the remaining minute or so we have here. Is it too soon to say that the Jets are – they're in an early season unraveling, I think. Adam Gase's reaction to their loss to the Bills.
Kind of threw some players under the bus.
Threw some players under the bus. They switched out kickers again. They're on their fourth kicker since the start of training camp. None was out for the rest of the year. I'm not saying the Jets can't recover. There are certain parts of their team, Le'Veon Bell and others, who are good, solid players. But I think the Jets have quickly and early this season hit a trouble spot, right? And
who was their?
Thank God it was the Bills that put him there.
Their kicker a year ago, was he or was he not in the Pro Bowl?
Yes, he was good.
And they let him go.
Let him go.
The top guy in the league.
And return specialist.
The top, and Andre Roberts they let go, Pro Bowl. The top kicker in the league is the guy from Baltimore, Justin Tuck. Makes $5 million a year on average. Five! That's like a backup linebacker. Pay the guy. Pay your all-pro kicker to stay and keep making kicks. It's nothing.
You know what I think this is, and this is not an excuse for the Jets. This is what happens when you change a coach, and a coach comes in who may have different opinions about certain personnel, and then you change a general manager when you're not convinced that McKagan is going to be around, and maybe you don't listen to his advice, sign this guy, keep this guy, right? This is what, when you have a top-level personnel change, coach, general manager, guys like that get lost in the shuffle. It's happened here, and all of a sudden you're scrambling.
We've seen it.
Four kickers since training camp began 6 weeks ago. That's amazing.
Poor leadership, man.
Yes, it is.
You can't. You got to have – and you, that's why I'm – listen, I know they played well the other night, but the Texans are – it's going to show up.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to show up that they don't have a general manager. They got like six guys doing the – splitting up the job of the general manager. Bill O'Brien is the guy that most teams answer to when they're asking about trades and this guy and that guy. Any transactions go through Bill O'Brien's office, and I think at this point he probably has final say on it, although there are some guys with a voice in the room. But there is no leader. It has to fall all the way to Bill O'Brien, the head coach. And, man, I'm telling you, it's a 24-hour day, 7 day a week, 365 days a year job to be a head coach of an NFL team. To be a head coach and a GM, it's going to show up. It's going to show up.
There is evidence that the Texans already today, the report is the Texans have released cornerback Aaron Colvin, signed to a four-year deal a year ago, $18 million guarantee, signed as free agent. He struggled against the Saints Monday night. We saw that, right? Both teams were struggling playing pass defense, but he struggled. Gave up a pass to Ted Ginn on the final play of the game, set up the Will Lutz field goal. And look, when you're a coach and you get mad, you know, like Lou Saban saying, you know, I'm going to cuts a kicker the night after he misses a field goal for the Bills. That's what coaches do. Aaron Colvin, man, how did he let that pass get by? Cut him. Well, that's why you have a general manager who says, well, I hear what you're saying, coach. I know you feel strongly about it, but we've got X amount invested in this guy. We thought at the time he was a pretty good player. We think he still might be. You know what I mean? A coach makes that decision to cut Aaron Colvin, not the general manager.
You can cut the guy because you're mad at him, but you still got to line up 11 guys, not 10.
Yeah.
So who's the guy in there? Is that guy going to be better?
Is he better than Aaron
Colvin? Why was he playing ahead of him?
Yeah.
You know, I get it. Maybe it was because of the money. But, man, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Right? So sooner or later, it's going to show up. And with the Jets, it kind of is with this kicking thing.
Sooner.
Right?
It warms my heart to see the Jets struggle this early. I'm not saying I don't like the Jets. I'm not saying it'll be a season-long issue. I do think there's enough talent there that they'll get a little bit better. But it does me good to see them struggle and to see their coach struggle.
In my tenure here on One Bills Live, I know this. There's a lot of things that you're salty about.
Oh,
and,
not really.
Yeah, and one of the things that you don't really cheer – you do. You openly cheer against some things. But one of the teams you really do hate is the New York Jets.
I do.
That kind of warms my heart that you hate them so much. I don't even hate them that much.
No, I hate them.
And they used to beat my brains out.
I've never been hit by a Jet. Unlike you.
It's not that much fun. But they kind of more so than I like even the Patriots. I mean,
I hate them worse. Yeah.
You hate the Jets worse than the Patriots.
I sure do.
See, yes. There you go. That's
I don't like the Patriots either.
Yeah, you've got some real baggage carrying around. We're going to have an intervention.
Let's do it. We'll do a whole show.
You've got some emotional baggage carrying around.
We got Field Yates coming up from ESPN. We'll talk some fantasy football and regular football with him, and you can phone in your questions for Field Yates about your fantasy lineup if you like. That's coming up after the top of the hour break. Come on back. It is One Bills Live presented by Kalina Health from our Seneca studio in Orchard Park, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.